The Irish Times Inside Business Podcast, in association with EY, building a better working world.
Hello and welcome to Inside Business with Ciarán Hancock, a podcast from the Irish Times. It's budget time once again, and this week I'm joined by a panel of experts to try and make sense of the main budget measures. Later you'll hear from Cliff Taylor and Mark Paul of the Irish Times and EY's head of tax, Kevin McLaughlin. But first, I'm joined by Jennifer Bray of our political staff to discuss the main points from the budget. Jennifer, maybe you can just take us through the main elements of Budget 2022.
Sure. So this is a budget that has been billed as one that will tackle the cost of living. And I think it has gone some of the way towards that. It is obviously the 4.7 billion package of new spending measures announced in the Dáil this afternoon. I suppose the headline measures that we knew a bit about beforehand, but obviously were announced this afternoon, include an across the board €5 increase in welfare payments from January, a €5 increase in the fuel allowance from tonight, the night of the budget, a full payment of the Christmas bonus, €520 million tax package, and of course the increase in the carbon tax by 750 per ton to €41. There's a couple of other measures in there in relation to the public service and in relation to families. So I'd be looking here at, say, for example, 100 or 1,000 extra teachers, 800 extra Gardaí, and then for families, the extension of families and children, the extension of the free GP care for children up to the age of 8. Of course, one of the biggest parts of the budget and one of the issues that was watched most closely was in relation to the business supports, the EWIS scheme, and we know now that this will be extended until next April. Obviously for the hospitality sector, a big issue was the 9% VAT rate, and we know that's extended until next summer as well, next August. And then we have kind of the perennials, the yearly chestnut, which is the 50 cent on a pack of cigarettes. There's a couple of other interesting bits, I suppose, that we didn't have the full figures for before, and these relate to COVID. Obviously the question is how much will the government need, how much will the country need in COVID spending next year. Very hard to actually forecast, given we don't actually know what's going to happen with COVID or what the trajectory of the virus will be. But we know that there will be a €4 billion contingency fund, which will be put aside, and many of the COVID funding that had been put aside for health up until now will actually be retained. So they are the kind of headline measures. Obviously, it struck me that there will be measures that will benefit families, but also measures that will benefit younger people, which is an interesting sort of political aside.
Yeah, what about this much talked about reduced transport costs for people who are aged, is it 19 to 23?
That's right, yeah. So this will basically mean that there will be a 50% reduction for people in those age group who use public transport. And that will include, you know, intercity routes. It will include the Lewis. It will include the bus. And, I think what the Green Party probably would have liked would be to extend a scheme that would have an 100% reduction. But obviously, there was negotiations in relation to figures and how much the state could afford. And this is where it landed. I suppose there's a couple of other interesting bits and pieces for younger voters, I suppose, that they might be interested in. You know, obviously we have the increase in the national minimum wage that will go up to €10.50 an hour, and we will also will see the maintenance grant for third level students increased by €200, and the qualifying income thresholds expanded by €1,000, and then the distance that you need to get that higher grant will be reduced. It used to be 45 kilometres and that'll now be 30 kilometres. And then even things like dental contribute or dental treatment benefits. So it used to be the case that people between the age of 25 and 28 would have to have 260 weeks contributions, and now that's cut massively, actually down to 39 weeks. And then I mentioned the minimum wage earlier on. We will see a tweaking in the top rates, the universal social charge, and the ceiling, basically to make sure that people who get the increase in the minimum wage that they're not put into the next tier of the universal social charge. So that's for younger voters. And then there's, I suppose, families will have been watching the budget very closely to see what will be in it for them. And we heard in the Dáil Michael McGrath talking about a €716 million investment in childcare. Now, he said that this budget would mark a turning point in the state's approach to the early years sector. That remains to be seen. I suppose what they did announce was that universal childcare subsidy will now be extended from children of 3 up to 15 from next September, and that will benefit thousands of children. Will cost around €5 million. There's a couple of welfare changes that will also benefit parents, and then there will also be the increase in parents' benefit itself from 2 weeks to 7 weeks from July. And obviously the welfare package is massive.
Jennifer, it's early days, I know, but any potential banana skins here politically for the government?
I think there are a few. I think for the government to, firstly, on the fact that they have said this is a budget that will tackle the cost of living. You know, there have been statistics that show that the cost of living in Ireland is anywhere up to 36% higher than other countries in the EU. And when you actually drill down into the figures in relation to personal taxation, the changes for some workers are potentially only around €1 or €2 a week. Now, look, you know, every little helps and all that, but I suppose when you're talking about addressing that gap, it doesn't really go very much of the way. I suppose the other two areas that there could be problems in relation to, the first one is housing. The biggest heckles in the Dáil and the biggest reaction from the opposition came when the government said that they were serious about tackling the housing crisis, and they announced their new land value tax that will actually have quite a long lead-in time, leading the opposition to say that the government aren't very serious about tackling the housing crisis. Also, when we talk about rent, if you look at the speeches, what's in there about rent, it was a rent relief basically for landlords when they're pre-letting effectively, as they're getting a premises ready, and that has been extended. So they're quite open there, I think, on the housing side, even though they've already had their day in the sun with the Housing for All plan. I suppose the other area then, like I said, the housing and the land tax and the personal taxation, I think they are actually the biggest areas that they are right now exposed to, the biggest areas where I can see kind of a banana skin, if you will.
Yeah, okay. Let's see how that plays out. Jennifer, I know it's a really busy day for you, so we're going to let you go. Thank you for joining Inside Business. I'm going to move now to Cliff Taylor. Cliff, you've been following budgets probably for more years than you care to remember. What was in it? What were the main items in this for you?
Thanks for pointing that out, Kieran. Yeah, I suppose the thing that framed it for me really was the extraordinary upgrade in the public finances, the outlook for the public finances, which we saw last weekend in the pre-budget white paper, which suddenly meant that the two ministers were able to do what they wanted to do while still announcing a big cut in borrowing next year and a much lower borrowing level next year than might have been expected. So if you look back to what the Department of Finance was saying in the summer, they reckoned that the Exchequer was going to have to borrow more than 14 billion next year to bridge the gap between spending and taxation. That figure has now come down on budget day to 8.5 billion. Now that is, you know, that's an extraordinary change in the course of a couple of months. And okay, we're coming out of a pandemic. Nobody knew how the economy was going to react, how the economy was going to bounce back. But it does indicate that there's been a really strong bounce in the economy over the last, over the last 6 months, particularly driven by consumer spending. And I think that it's happened much more quickly than expected. So I think that allowed the government to give little bits of money all over the place, and still, if you like, bring in a lower borrowing figure than expected. It is very much a spending budget. I know there was some reaction afterwards to, some Roisin Shortall and some opposition TDs saying, look, the additional money that went to tax cuts should have gone to spending. But really, this is all about spending. We've a 4.7 billion package, and 4.2 billion of that's gone to spending. And already there was more spending built, baked into the figures before we even got to that. So the tax cuts are really small compared to that. This really is a spending budget. And it's the booming economy that's allowed the government to pay for it. I guess the question is, how's that going to look, in 2 or 3 years' time? Are we still going to be seeing the same rates of growth? Can we rely on the gift that has kept on giving, corporation tax, to keep on giving yet again over the next few years? And you have to reckon, that even if we get a kind of a plausibly decent outcome from that, we're not going to see corporation tax going up at the same rate that it has been. So the spending looks like it's going to keep going back up. We've been able to delay the decisions this year on how we're going to pay for that, how we're going to pay for the bigger state. But I think those decisions are looming, and they're probably looming as soon as next year's budget.
Sure. Kevin McLaughlin, you're head of tax at EY, and I saw a note come in from EY earlier saying that the personal taxation measures that were announced by the government in terms of the tax bans, the tax credits, the UAC, USC rate, going to be worth for high earners up to €415 per annum for those on the higher rate of tax. It's not insubstantial.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably been one of the bigger expansions of the standard rate band. But I think it is interesting that, it's not to say that, as you give with one hand, you take away with the other. But I suppose, again, carbon taxes have been kind of legislated for last year. So, again, everybody will face increased fuel costs associated with rises in carbon tax. And again, one thing that didn't really get a mention today, but which was announced earlier in the summer, was again a rebasing of valuations for local property taxes. So again, the expectation is that, you know, the increased yield from your local property tax will be quite significant. I think around about 500 million. I think the total cost of the changes to the personal rate bands was close to about 600. So I think while the personal income tax changes actually aren't insignificant, I think the reality, I suppose, is that some of those will go to pay for increased carbon taxes and increased local property tax bills.
I'm sure you and your team have been going through the fine detail of the budget documents. What else have you noticed on the tax side?
Yeah, I think probably just to echo maybe Cliff's point first to begin with, because I think it's very clear that it's that increase in consumer spending and the return to higher employment numbers that are driving higher exchequer revenues, obviously with the addition of very buoyant corporation tax revenues. I think, and while there's very, really positive news around how that deficit is shrinking a little bit, it's still a substantial amount to bridge. And I think the question is, it seems to be fundamentally based on the ability of the economy to sustain the level of activity that it has, because it's hard to see that, you know, just further kind of return to employment and that kind of consumer-led spending is going to plug the gap completely. So it is very much hinge on that future economic growth being maintained at its current levels. But it is an interesting contrast as well, I think, when you look at other countries and what they've done. So the UK is a good example recently, again, where it probably would be off the back of an economic outlook that may perhaps isn't relatively as positive, where they would have gone down the route of raising taxes, raising employers, the equivalent of employers PRSI as part of their steps to bridge the gap. And I think, as Cliff says, we haven't done that this year. There is a question as to whether that might be needed in future years.
And Kevin, potentially a small tax break for those who are working from home in terms of their electricity bills and broadband and so on. Although, mind you, if you look at the documents, the budget documents themselves, the cost of the state is only 11 million euros. So it doesn't seem like it's going to be a huge amount of money for people working from home.
Yeah, again, I think we've calculated, Kieran, that it's probably worth just over about 100 and odd euros to kind of a higher rate taxpayers. So, you know, it's not going to turn the dial significantly in that regard. But I think there were other measures, I think, for business that actually were broadly positive, particularly on the funding side, you know, kind of the relaxation of some of the restrictions in the EIIF scheme, that kind of strategic investment fund, which is geared towards innovation, the kind of tax break for startup companies in terms of, you know, not paying tax for the first 3 years has been extended to 5 years. And I think that is very much, I think, designed to try and encourage early stage Irish businesses to create employment. And interestingly, I think to try and do it on a regionally balanced basis, which I think probably recognises that entrepreneurial community, if you like, is more likely to do that perhaps than bigger FDI.
Mark, you've been looking at some of the business measures included in the budget. And what struck me is that the Restaurant Association was out of the traps very quickly to describe the budget as a disaster for its members, saying that they're going to really need a lot of help over the next 5 years. That was before Michael McGrath had even stood up to give his part of the budget speech. Have they resiled from that at all? Because there were some measures in there for the hospitality sector in Michael McGrath's speech, or are they sticking to their line?
Well, look, DRAI is prone sometimes to a little bit of hyperbole, and I think maybe that falls into that category. Look, if the budget was a meal, for the Restaurants Association of Ireland or for anyone else in the hospitality industry, if it was a meal, I think it was a sweet and sour, I think is the best way to look at it. The sweetness came in the form of 60 million euros to extend a commercial rates waiver to the end of the year. There was a 39 million euro in there for tourism marketing to bring more foreign tourists into the country. But of course, the sour bit of it, and what really prompted the RAI to call it a disaster, was the failure to extend the special tourism VAT rate of 9% beyond the end of next August. Now, this is something that wasn't just flagged by the government in the summer. It was actually confirmed that they were going to do this. So this was already known. And what the tourism and hospitality industries were lobbying hard for was this to be extended even further. Now, from one point of view, it's a measure that is absolutely loathed by mandarins in the Department of Finance. They really, really dislike it because it's a very expensive and very blunt measure. The last time that it was in place, from 2011 until 2018, I think it was, The Department of Finance concluded that it was a dead weight measure. They said there was an awful lot of dead weight in it. But the other side of the coin is that when it was first announced or reintroduced, should we say, in the budget last year, and what followed after that was almost 6 months of lockdowns when the industry got no good out of it at all. Because, I mean, if there's no trade, if there's no tourism happening, if pubs and restaurants are shut, it doesn't matter what the VAT rate is, and you get no benefit out of it. And it was originally supposed to cost 401 million euros from last year's budget to the end of this year. Now, you know, about 6 months of that was gone. So conceivably, you would have thought that they would use that to extend it further. It'll cost about 250 million quid to extend it to the end of August. But I think sometimes people underestimate it. They see a change from 9% VAT going back up to 13.5% VAT. And they say, sure, look, it's only 4.5%. Sure, you know, that's not the end of the world. That's 4.5 percentage points from that business's top line. So that if you're making a 1% profit, that's going to put you into a 3.5% loss. If you're making a 5% profit, it's going to turn it into a 0.5% profit. So it's a huge change for businesses. But look, it's a very, very expensive measure. There were other measures in there to boost the tourism industry. I mean, I noticed Catherine Martin, the Minister for Tourism, was tweeting that she's going to put up or that she secured 10 million euros for digital technology, for skills training, and also to support the US college football game that's coming to Dublin next year. That's part of a drive to bring in US tourists. This 39 million euro for tourism marketing, the bulk of that will go towards to Tourism Ireland for international tourists. And then, of course, there was another big ask of the tourism ministry was to try and restore plane routes. I mean, planes were mothballed all over the world during the winter and during lockdowns. And of course, every country is out now trying to restore their airline routes at the same time. So Michael McGrath announced 90 million euros, which will basically be spent on inducements to airlines to reopen their routes, and that's going to be critically important. The mood music from airlines like Ryanair and from other airlines is that demand is there. If people are allowed to travel and if they feel safe, and of course that's dependent on the public health situation, they will travel. So next year will really be the year, where we'll see how and in what sort of health the tourism industry will exit the pandemic, if of course the exit comes next year and we don't fall back into the same public health trap again.
At EY, our purpose is to build a better working world. As one of Ireland's leading professional services firms, our exceptional people are at the centre of everything we do. We deploy technology at speed and innovation at scale to deliver exceptional solutions for our clients, enabling them to transform and grow. To find out more, visit ey.com.
Cliff Taylor, the EWSS, the wage subsidy scheme, is also being extended. He said there'd be no pun intended here, Cliff, there'd be no cliff edge scenario with the EWSS. But it is being tapered off, and there will be kind of a two-tier structure to it in the future, won't there?
Yeah, nothing worse than a cliff edge, Ciarán. Yeah, it's been tapered, and it's been tapered in the way that kind of they had thought about doing last year, and kind of pull back from because their restrictions are reimposed. So it'll move to a two-tier structure, and it'll be phased out then completely by the end of next April. So plus side for businesses is they get an extension, and for, I suppose, a lot of retail businesses, a lot of hospitality businesses, that extension will help them to get through the winter, which is traditionally, particularly for the hospitality sector, the worst time, you know, certainly those months after Christmas when people don't have any money, is the worst time. So that's good news for those businesses. I mean, I think talking to people in the sector recently for a piece I was doing, I mean, they are worried about what happens when those subsidies are phased out completely. They're worried about what state their businesses are going to be in. And, you know, as of now, they're saying if the subsidy rug is pulled from under me, I don't know if I can keep going. I certainly wouldn't be able to employ so many people. I guess the issue is where are they going to be next April? And from the government's point of view, the issue is, look, we've given you these special supports during the pandemic, and assuming, as Mark said, that we're through the worst of it by then and we're not back into more restrictions, the government will feel that it can't keep supporting businesses that aren't going to be viable in future. And you know, that is just something that it can't afford to do. So I guess the crunch was always going to come at some stage, and it looks like it's going to come next year. So, I mean, we did see the bankruptcy, the ban on bankruptcies, if you like, lifted recently, and no big rush to the courts on the foot of that so far. I guess the question is, as the supports are phased out now over the months ahead, are we going to see more businesses go to the wall and more businesses that can't make it? We'll certainly see some. But I guess at the same time, the government believes that, you know, it can't stay forever. On the VAT rate, as Mark said, I was kind of surprised he didn't knock that out till the end of next year. I would have thought, I was a bit of a skeptic when it was introduced. And, you know, there is certainly evidence that it benefits a lot of people who don't need the benefit, if you like. You know, it helps a lot of businesses, but it also helps those that don't need help. But nonetheless, I would have thought, given the state the sector is in, given the politics of it, it might have been the thing to do to knock it out to December next year and say, look, that's going to be it then. But he certainly, I think, set himself up for a fight next year. And if there's one thing local TDs are going to be lobbying on heading into next year, that is certainly going to be one of the issues that's going to stay around.
Yeah, one of the things, Cliff, that struck me was the employment numbers. I mean, he's talking about 400,000 jobs being created between this year and next, which is kind of extraordinary when you think about it. Now, I know that the economy is coming back, but nonetheless, and some of the public finance numbers as well, the headline stuff, they're actually pretty good when you consider what we've been through over the past 18, 19 months.
Yeah, they're extraordinarily good. And I think they've taken the department by surprise. And they've pretty much taken all private sector forecasters by surprise as well. And you'd have to think that Pascal Donoghue and Michael McGrath would have seen this coming for the last few months and been very careful to say as little as possible about it, because they knew that the more they said, the more that door would be knocked on by other ministers looking for money to be spent or taxes to be cut in the budget. So they kept it under wraps. And I think a lot of their ministerial colleagues are going to be coming back to them and saying, hey, look, you never told us about that. But they've kept to the spending limits and that were set out in the summer economic statement last year. So those limits have been adhered to in terms of the amount of money that's going to be spent next year. So what that's meant is it's allowed them to put some money into a contingency fund. First of all, the 4 billion fund that I think Jennifer referred to, which is up from 2.8 billion that had been planned. And secondly, it's allowed for borrowing to be much lower. So it does give them a bit more leeway, I think, going into next year. You know, if you're borrowing 8 billion rather than 14 billion, another 2 years, the budget might be back in balance if growth remains strong. It does make the exit for the public finances from the pandemic look a lot better than it would have been. But of course, we've seen how quickly, I guess, the figures can turn up. And, you know, let's hope it doesn't happen. But really, we've very little idea how the world economy is going to exit from the pandemic over the next couple of years. We've very little idea what inflation is going to be like, what interest rates are going to be like. All really key factors for a small economy like Ireland. The Brexit threat is still shuffling around there in the background. So there are a lot of uncertainties there. You know, let's just hope that things can stay on track, because it'll make the decisions in next year's budget and the ones to come an awful lot easier.
Kevin, what's the EY view on inflation?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. I think that the kind of introductory comments were very much around recognising cost of living driven by inflation. I think what the minister did talk about was trying to determine how much of those were temporary and how much of them were actually longer term, but actually didn't go into huge detail as to actually giving a view one way or the other. I think it's pretty clear when you look at other jurisdictions that inflation is heading north and doesn't look to be any short-term fixes to that. I think one of the ones that I think is really important, and I think it is the kind of labour piece, because again, I think that was called out, the labour shortage was seen as one of the drivers of inflation. And again, I think if you ask a lot of businesses now, you know, they've probably gone very quickly from, you know, hunkering down, if you like, during the kind of restrictions to now very, very quickly been in a situation where the biggest crunch is actually the availability of talent, availability of labour, and you can already see costs there actually rocketing quite significantly north, and actually how that shortage is tackled isn't really clear. There wasn't a mention of it really, other than the initial comment at the start that said, look, it was one of the contributory factors, but actually kind of that ability to create 400,000 jobs over the next year or two is a huge ask in reality.
Kevin, he also mentioned a land tax, which is going to replace the vacant site levy. A few moving parts to it, I think it's fair to say. Have you figured out what it's going to mean and what it's going to mean for people with land holdings and with zoned land for residential?
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones, Ciarán, where the detail was kicked out to the finance bill, which will be published in a number of weeks' time. So I think all we can do at this stage is probably speculate as to what the shape of it might be. It seems to be kind of designed to achieve a situation where, you know, depending on the current zoning status of your land or at particular dates into the future, this 3% will kick in if you've held it beyond, 2024, I think actually was the date that they're envisaging, and potentially 2025. So it seems to be trying to encourage, you know, people to actually develop land over the course of the next 2 years and then having the stick available then after that. I suppose what would be interesting to see is exactly what the funds raised from this would be used for. So would it be effectively ploughed back? Because I think one of the differences, with the current levy is that this is actually going to be collected by the revenue commissioners, not local authorities. But I think the extent to which, let's say, any funds that are raised from it are reinvested at that local authority level in kind of, let's say, investing in services or infrastructure effectively for sites to enable actually better development, that piece is not clear just as yet. So I think the devil, I think, will definitely be in the detail on that one.
Yeah, I was struck by the fact that local authorities are going to have to develop and publish maps for these sites, which strikes me that could take some time. Mark Paul, Pascal Donoghue in particular tried to strike a very upbeat tone about the shape of the Irish economy coming out of the pandemic, that we're in really good shape. And this was as a result of everybody putting their shoulder to the wheel. And now is the time for some prudent measures to make sure we keep everything on track and keep debt levels sustainable. I'm just wondering, in the business community as a whole, are they feeling upbeat about the future, about the economy, given, you know, all of the labour shortages that we hear about, all of the supply chain and logistics issues that we hear about, and all of the, if you're a small business in particular, when these supports eventually do taper off, that's a crutch gone from under you, and what the future might hold.
Yeah, I mean, it was really noticeable in Pascal Donoghue's speech when he was talking about, you know, the consumer spending and the sort of wall of money that was going back into the economy. And I suppose, look, that served a purpose for Pascal Donoghue as well, mind you, because it meant he didn't really have to stand up there and reach too deeply into his pocket for a whole bunch of measures for the retail industry, which outside of tourism and hospitality is the other sector that was absolutely walloped during the pandemic. I mean, he was able to turn around and point to consumer spending and effectively telegraphing without specifically saying, look, this is what's going to save you. People are spending money, they're opening their wallets, therefore I don't have to open mine for you. The retail sector, just to take that sector on its own, Retail Excellence, which is one of the main lobby groups in the sector, they said that it was not a budget for business. They struck quite a downbeat tone. One of the issues actually that they raised, aside from labour shortages and so on, is town centres. This was also raised by Chambers Ireland. There was a little bit of disappointment among businesses out there that there was no specific pot of money set aside to revitalise town centres and to bring people back in. And I suppose, look, the October 22nd lifting of all restrictions, and when you'd hope that people would start creeping back to their offices a little bit more after that, maybe that will give a little bit of a boost. But there was disappointment there. The labour shortages thing, I think, is really, really acute in some sectors, depending on where you are. I mean, it's there's a little bit of a paradox there for the hospitality sector. I mean, they're worried about their trade levels on one side, but on the other side, they're saying that, you know, if you help us out, we can create more jobs. But on the other side of the coin, they can't fill the jobs that they have. There is a real skills shortage in that industry, and there was nothing you wouldn't expect to find it in a budget, I suppose. But there was nothing to address that skill shortage there. Another issue that is cropping up for an awful lot of businesses as well, from retail, tourism, hospitality, and anybody based in around urban areas, is antisocial behaviour. And maybe the 800 extra guards that were mentioned will help to address that, but certainly not immediately. I mean, those guards have to be recruited and trained down in Templemore before you can put them on the streets to stop young fellas egging cars at the top of O'Connell Street, which is the type of thing that's been happening. And antisocial behaviour, whether it's of that kind, whether it's of street violence or muggings, or just a general sense of eeriness that you find now sometimes late at night around Dublin city centre. I don't know, maybe I'm just an odd fellow, Ciarán, but I often seem to find myself striding the streets of Dublin very, very late at night. And you really notice that it is not quite the welcoming, jolly city that it was before the pandemic. I think there's a little bit more of an edge to it. And that is something that is really worrying businesses. And Chambers Ireland and Retail Excellence both call for measures to address that. So look, maybe in the next budget, there'll have to be a pot of money for that. Let's hope that these issues work themselves out in the meantime.
Yeah, that's not a great tone to hit, is it? Really, if you're looking to attract tourists, having a bit of an edge to your city streets at night. Kevin, I hate to bring us back to corporate tax because we're all sick talking about it over the past couple of weeks, but I will. What do you think the corporate tax measures, the fact that we've signed up to this 15% rate globally, what will that mean for the Irish economy going forward? Not just in terms of our tax receipts, but also in terms of FDI and how they view Ireland, because I'm sure you talk to foreign direct investors in Ireland most days of the week. So what are they saying to you?
Yeah, I think the minister was at pains today, I think, to kind of, you know, further explain or suppose support the decision that the government had taken to kind of join the framework agreement. And I think it was very strong on the basis that he felt there was two things that were achieved, I think, as a result of that. One was that they could actually maintain the 12.5% rate for what is effectively probably the bulk of indigenous business in Ireland. So that gives predictability there. And I think then to kind of avoid a situation where a minimum was agreed at global level, this 15%, but then, you know, Ireland would lose control over what direction that might take in future years. So I think for Ireland to be able to fix at 15%, I think the minister felt was actually a really important concession, if we can frame it that way. But I think it's been interesting to observe the reaction internationally, Kieran, because actually most international business, I'd say, is not unduly perturbed by it. I think they see this as something that isn't directed at Ireland particularly. Actually, it's part of what's been an ongoing effort over a number of years to try and harmonise, I suppose, how international rules and international tax policy better coordinates itself amongst the kind of international community. I think what it probably does is it does mean, you know, there will still be gaps, you know, so 15% is the minimum, then everybody has to agree to that. Everybody who signs up to that has to agree to that. There still will be differences between that 15% and what other higher rates some countries might choose to operate. US and the UK being probably good examples there, where they're in the 20s at this stage. But fundamentally, I think, I don't think there's enough there that'll shift the dial for existing investment in Ireland. I think they've a long history here, which has broadly been positive. But I think it's probably the importance going forward of some of the more non-tax factors associated with our competitiveness, and particularly probably comes back to the quality and availability of labour and the kind of skills that international business needs, if you like, in places like Ireland. So I think those non-tax factors will probably assume increasing prominence, I think, in these location decisions going forward.
Cliff, maybe just to finish on a political point, could you see the fingerprints of the three different parties in coalition government at the minute on this budget? And is it enough for them to curry favour with voters? Because clearly Sinn Féin are striding ahead in the polls. And I know we're a long way out from the election, and, you know, sometimes Sinn Féin's poll rating doesn't translate into actual votes on the day. But nonetheless, Sinn Féin are breeding down the next, particularly Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Now, does this budget do enough to move the dial for them in terms of their perception by voters?
Yeah, in terms of the different parties, yeah, I think you can see bits there, all right. I mean, there are certainly the obvious green measures that Eamon Ryan has been talking about subsequent to the budget. There's some of the Fianna Fáil kind of support things on housing. For example, the housing scheme has been extended, the Help to Buy scheme has been extended at a higher level, which is something that Dara O'Brien, I'm sure, was arguing for. And I guess we've seen Leo Varadkar in the last few weeks pushing as well as for higher spending all over the place. He's been talking about tax cuts. And while the amount of cuts we saw were small and arguably were kind of the income tax regime is really just being adjusted for inflation and for kind of wage inflation, the increase a lot of people are going to get, there was something done there, and probably more than was seen in recent years. I think the second part of your question, will it be enough? I think a lot of it depends on delivery. I don't think the amounts of money included in this package are going to be enough to really change the dial in terms of people's perceptions. You know, ventures would be that of an extra €5, and people would be glad of income tax cuts. But as Kevin said, they'll see the money going out in other directions. So I'm not sure that's going to be a huge deal. I think the key thing for the government is going to come down to delivery over the next couple of years. So there's massive amounts of money being ploughed into healthcare. I see some people coming out reacting afterwards saying, you know, it's still not enough. We still need more. We still need more to cut waiting lists and so on and so on. There's massive amounts going into investment in housing. And obviously Sinn Féin are on their case there saying, look, you need to spend more, you need to deliver. So I think delivery is going to be the thing for the government in these key areas. Can all these extra amounts of money, and I think the higher tax that's going to go with it over the next few years, can they actually deliver better services for people? You know, are services at a better cost and services at a higher quality level? And, you know, as we move towards paying kind of continental European levels of taxation, can we get childcare and housing and the kind of things, you know, standards of living that are typical in those economies? So I think that's the key issue for the government. And it does kind of, it kind of encourages them maybe to hang together, because they need the time to try and make those kind of things work. Because clearly now people have kind of lost faith a bit in that aspect of their agenda. Possibly some positives from their handling of the pandemic. I'm surely some positives from their handling of the pandemic and the vaccines and all that. But that doesn't seem to be counting in the polls. People now seem to be taking that as eaten bread, and they're looking for delivery on kind of the old style agenda. So we're going to be back to old style politics and a very interesting time. I think it's going to come down to delivery. And it's also going to come down to whether the strong economic growth can continue, because that just always makes things easier.
Mark Paul, last word on this to you.
On whether or not it'll change. Look, I think that I don't think it'll be enough for the government, because I think the changes that are pushing Sinn Féin up the poll are much more fundamental. There's a fundamental shift in the axis of politics, and Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil control as much money at this as they can, but it's going to be very, very difficult for them to resist the rise of Sinn Féin, because you can see it in the shifts amongst attitudes amongst younger people. I think they're just fed up a little bit with the old political system, and they just see any spending by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael as just a stick and plaster over that. And I'd be very surprised personally if Sinn Féin weren't in the next government either as a minority or a majority partner.
Okay, well, plenty to ponder there. My thanks to Kevin McLaughlin, Mark Paul, and to Cliff Taylor for joining us on this special budget podcast from Inside Business.